Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney, you're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
This podcast is brought to you by SIGGRAPH Asia 2012, in Singapore from November 28th to December 1st. FX Guide is the official podcast of SIGGRAPH Asia.
Hi, and welcome to this week's FX Podcast. I'm Mike Seymour. Well, today Luxology and the Foundry announced they were merging. We have a really in-depth piece looking at that as a written piece on FX Guide, where we have exclusive interviews with the management teams of both companies. But we also wanted to put together for you a round table of industry experts to work out whether we thought this was a good move or not, and what the implications might be sort of looking down the road. How could this play out in the future, and is this even something that we should care about? And so we put together a panel that had people that were from either games or VFX, either Modo users or not, people that were at the high end and people that were at smaller facilities. We start with Tim Carlson. Tim is at Magnetic Dreams, and he's a senior animator there. He's a Modo user and doesn't have really much anything to do with Foundry products, as you'll hear. Kim Labreri. Kim is a VFX supervisor, very senior at ILM, though most recently he's been involved with 13, the video game. Then we have Rob Bradow. Rob is CTO at Sony Pictures Imageworks and clearly has a major perspective on the long-term implications to the industry, but Sony also was a company that sold Katana to the Foundry. And then we have Sebastian Silwan. Now, Sebastian's at Weta, and Weta, again, he's a CTO, but Weta also did what Sony did, of course, in having Mari move from Weta to the Foundry. So a really good industry perspective of people that are involved in high-end productions and people that are involved in games and VFX. And at the end of the day, as you'll hear, we're going to build to asking all four of them basically one simple question. Was today a good day or a bad day for the VFX industry? So first, let me say thanks for joining us, guys. We really appreciate it. We certainly know that your time is tight. Kim, I was just wondering, when you first heard about this, what was your initial reaction to this idea of these two companies getting together?
Sounded pretty interesting, you know. We've been following Modo for quite a few years and always been intrigued by its sort of WYSIWYG philosophy for content creation. And as you know, most of us use the Foundry's products for compositing and now for texture painting and all sorts of great stuff. So seeing a sort of unified workflow from one company from beginning to end where interactivity and artist feedback is sort of paramount, it sounds very exciting. Obviously, they've got a lot of work to do, but it sounds pretty exciting.
So, Kim, you're really bridging two worlds at the moment, aren't you? Because you have, of course, an incredible film history, which we've all enjoyed, but also now 1313.
I'm glad you liked Catwoman there. Nice to know, Mike.
I did. I liked it a lot.
But, I've been working in games for the last year, as you know, everything in video games is interactive. If it doesn't run at 30 frames a second, then you can't ship it. So one of the cool things that we've been doing is we've been exploring using, the same GPU technology we use to make the game in the texture painting system that I think Sebastian's pretty familiar with over there in Mari. So, it's really exciting to see how productive people can be when, everything that they do is, tweak one button and instantly you see a change. And although it's not the same as, rasterized real-time GPU graphics, Modo's approach to lighting where, everything is live, even if you're adjusting the model, you can see a render of what you're doing almost instantly, is a real sort of time booster.
Sebastian, let me ask you this question. I mean, this question of GPU was raised, and yet I think sometimes GPU is seen as a solution to everything. Is the solution for these two companies to get as much stuff to the GPU, or is really GPU only relevant for some things?
Well, I think that GPUs, it's a tool, right? So I think that it's not that it's relevant for some things, but it's there are things that are better suited for it, and there are things in which, at least with the current state of technology, we have ability of leveraging more. I have to say that this is certainly an area that is interesting, and certainly we are in interesting times in that regard, Kim is working on that, and we're working as well. There's a lot of interest, and there's a lot of interesting things happening in that realm. I don't think that you can just throw anything at it and expect to get a better performance. I think that you just have to pick the right tool for the right problem.
So, Rob, Kim touched on this idea of end-to-end solutions, but it seems to me that if I know anything about your pipeline, especially with Katana, but then ending up with your version of Arnold and rendering and stuff, it's a matter of putting a whole series of tools together. Do you think that you don't use Modo now, but I mean, is it an important thing for these companies to try and get end-to-end solution, or is it better to have plugs that can be put into a pipeline or, you know, components that are not thought of as being one continuum?
Well, you know, for the kind of work that we do, we're tending to push the boundaries in lots of different areas, often at the same time. So here at ImageWorks, that's almost always the kind of thing that gets that are the kind of projects that that we find ourselves doing. So it's unlikely, I think, that any single product, no matter how terrific it is really going to be an end-to-end solution for the majority of the work we do. But you know, that's why when I look at something like Modo and see that it already supports Alembic, and you know, see some of these other packages, it's kind of obvious how they might start to fit together in different ways. You know, what was most interesting to me about hearing about this news was that, you know, I'd always pictured Foundry as the kind of company that wanted to, let's say, own or provide an entire pipeline for the back end of the pipeline, the stuff that happens after animation. And this kind of you know, gives me pause. Says, what kind of country? What it looks like Foundry has the site set a little bigger than that, which, you know, is different than I had expected. It's definitely interesting.
But to a certain extent, I see you causing that to a point, right? And it's a good thing. It was clear that the Katana licensing was or at least I interpreted it that way, that it was an exploration and starting to bridge into the 3D world and having kind of an end-to-end. So I think that this is to me this is a curious thing to me. I'm very curious to see how it will pan out, because I think that it's the natural step moving into more involvement with the 3D side of things. It is certainly in continuum with the Katana partnership. I think that the I'm very curious to see how it will turn out.
Well, of course, you guys were responsible for them getting Mari. So that will also push them further in the pipeline. But let me just switch to Tim for a second. Tim, because these guys are talking at obviously the high end, and they all in their own right are with companies that do spectacularly large projects, and having a big pipeline is killer. But you represent the user that maybe doesn't give a rat's ass about some of this stuff. I mean, is this a move that is significant to you? Because you couldn't possibly be working on the scale that these guys are. Very few companies are, but most people are going to fall into line with you, Tim, rather than maybe with Weta or ILM or Sony.
It's an interesting thing. When I heard that these two companies were merging, I had two really initial gut reactions. One was, this is really interesting, similar to the other fellows. That this is just a really interesting thing, because you've got these two companies that have very similar philosophies in how they relate to their users. And I'd be really interested in seeing just how they're going to, they both have very interesting technologies to leverage from each other. I'd like to see exactly where they go with this. The other thing that really struck me was, it doesn't seem like an obvious choice at first. Modo has no history in VFX, at least definitely not to the extent that Foundry does. Foundry is, you know, all about VFX. Modo was not built or designed to be integrated into a VFX pipeline. I hope that it becomes that, because we could sure use it here. That said, you know, we are in a small studio. We've got about 30 people. We do a lot of broadcast stuff, a lot of TV. We did just finish our first VFX, feature-length VFX project, took a couple hundred shots, and that was great. But we're still definitely, you know, the little fish in the sea, so to speak. That said, pipeline is still a big deal to us. It's still important because of our fast turnarounds that we have and the quick deadlines that we have. We still have to get this stuff through a pretty well-oiled machine. And, you know, for that reason, for example, We're a soft image house, and we use MinRay. That's pretty much what we do. We don't use Modo a lot. I'm the primary Modo user, doing primarily modeling and texturing with it, maybe some look dev. And I would love nothing more than to be able to explore the Modo renderer as an option for rendering, because I'd love to move away from MinRay, for example. Our other options with Softimage are, you know, basically V-Ray, 3D-Lite, and Arnold. And all of those present really good options. They do present some cost and things of that sort. But Modo's render is just fantastic. And for the kind of stuff we do, it's really, really great. Right now, Modo's not that kind of tool. It's very difficult for us to integrate it in any further than, more deeply, shall we say, than for one-offs or for... just little occasional projects here and there. And if one thing I really hope that comes out of this is that the Foundry can really share some of their expertise with pipeline integration in getting Modo better suited for that kind of work.
I've got one hope for this whole thing is that, you know, as we all know, everybody in visual effects is constantly being pressured to produce amazing looking stuff on cheaper and cheaper budgets, more cost-effective budgets, with more complicated stuff in the frame. You know, we're getting to the point where it's very common that, you know, you're working on a composite and the final pixels that you see in that composite have nothing to do with the individual elements. You know, lighters are often lighting on individual components or bits of a background, bits of a creature. There's an effects element in there. And it only really comes together when we put it together in Nuke in the composite. What I would love to see is... And this is what I mean by end-to-end. It doesn't mean that the tools are all one big, massive, amorphous blob, but I really would love to be able to do lighting and look dev and TD work from within the lens of the composite, to be able to look at all these things layered together and take advantage of a progressive renderer like Modo has, you know, assuming that Modo can deal with the scale that we're used to in the high end, but be able to have confidence that when the light is adjusting lights, they actually see it in the context of the final shot. Because right now, the way that we tend to deal with things is that we output lots of AOVs, lots of buffers, and, you know, basically get the composite of the light in a shot anyway by adjusting levels. And I think that that can all go away in the future. It's not magically going to happen because there's a ton of work that both these companies would have to do to sort of give us a product like this. But I'm hoping in the long run, that's where it all goes.
And Sony would have to be... I mean, a key part of that discussion, right? Because yeah. Katana is one of the most, which obviously a Foundry product now, but it's one of the most serious attempts at trying to get towards that, isn't it, Rob?
Well, yeah, what Kim is describing is actually the original vision of Katana. A lot of people probably know that when Katana started at ImageWorks, it was to do both the 2D work, the compositing work, and the 3D lighting. Now, and we did. We delivered shows where it did both. And the whole idea of having all that data live at all times, so that when you're in your composite, if you click into, you know, if you click into the viewport and you need to be moving a light to achieve what you need to do, you're using the same package. If you want, you can have one Katana file that does the whole thing. Now, what Foundry has brought to market first, of course, is the 3D lighting component of Katana and the scene assembly and all the look dev that goes with it, because they already have a very capable product in Nuke. In fact, it's in many, many ways more capable than the Katana 2D compositor ever was. So that's why we have switched to using Nuke for our final frames. But the eventual hope here is exactly what Kim says, which is a workflow that doesn't have these hard stops in it that require, say, kickbacks to people who are using completely different tools to achieve something when, you know, in actuality, if you were doing this in real life, you just reach over and move a light and then change the filter on the camera, and you could do all that stuff interactively in real time. And that's certainly where we want to be heading long term. But of course, there's a huge amount of work to do between now and then.
If Kim has issues with getting real time performance, and of course, you know, Sony bridges both animated features and visual effects, but Weta is just really good at breaking pipelines for sheer volume of data. I mean, you guys just set some kind of record with just pathological desires for big shots, Sebastian. Is it feasible that you can get...
Did you say that we're good at breaking pipelines?
Well, good at breaking records of pipelines anyway. But you do deal with huge data sets, right? Is it feasible that you're going to get a product that's going to be able to work well for Tim and work well for Weta? In the abstract, I don't mean that you're going to adopt Modo wholesale, but I mean, it's a big ask, isn't it?
Well, so I don't think that there isn't a product right to be made. There are, as Rob was saying, many products for many different applications. Right? You can't expect. So Katana abstracts away some of the complexity. We're not using it. We have tools that have similar philosophies to that, but it's a way to abstract some of that complexity away. When Kim is working in an environment, and of course, having the context around the creative decisions that you're making is an essential part of it. And when he's working with GPU technologies to do this, he's not working with the same data sets that, leave alone however big our data sets are, but that any visual effects facility nowadays is using. And I think that there is a continuum there of the things that can be handled and of the things that and of the types of data that you have. It is interesting when we start to combine these types of data, or when we start to think about alternate representations for that data, and that's where pipelines come in. The pipelines that we were mentioning before around Nuke and how to integrate various tools is really just picking the best tool, the best data, and the best workflow for each one of these applications and making sure that we're pushing in the right direction. I think that there is certainly a lot of progress to be made, say from the modal standpoint. I like the same things that Kim was mentioning earlier. First of all, I would love to see a Linux version of it, because that's the environment we work in. And I think that there is also a market consideration, right? So as somebody was pointing out earlier, I think that the entrance into more of a visual effects environment and more visual effects context is welcome. And much in the same way, I am assuming that part of the interest from the Foundry was also entering a design space, which is also converging in many of the same tools.
Tim, what do you want to see not happen?
What do I want to see not happen?
Yeah.
I don't want to see then consider that just by taking Modo and taking the product suite that's already exists, that they're done. It's not that straightforward. I think that, you know, one thing that I have learned with spending time in video games is that if you're really smart about how you manage your level of details and you think about, well, ultimately we're only rendering, you know, 2 megapixels or 8 megapixels, whatever resolution we're working at, there are clever ways of representing data that means that you don't have to have a human being manage all that complexity. And I would love to see these crazy massive data sets that we talk about sort of be represented in a more efficient manner that allows us to, you know, take billions of polygons and still fly around the scene interactively by having clever pre-processing passes as things get checked in. So I don't want them to think that they're done, basically. I think that computer graphics has got many decades of evolution still ahead of it. Who knows? The polygon may be dead in another 10 years. We may go to volumetrics. And I just want to see them continue to innovate and not, you know, rest on the laurels.
And Tim, to you at the other end of the spectrum, what do you want to see not happen?
Well, as someone who's pretty close to Luxology, I'm able to beta test for them, and I've had a good rapport with the community for a number of years now. I don't want to see that sense of community that Luxology has worked so hard for go by the wayside. I don't want to see Brad Peebler's interaction and the developers' interactions with their users lessened in any way. I think that's one of the great strengths of Luxology, is that they're a very open company in terms of being able to get their users to talk to the developers and talk to the people at Luxology and get feedback. And that's one of the things that I'd really like not to see happen. I do want to echo, though, the importance of getting Modo to the point where it can handle larger data sets. That's an issue. On the beta forums recently, there was a question was asked. I think Brad Hayes posed a question and said, why aren't there more VFX studios using Modo? And of those of us that responded to that question, that there are pretty much two common answers. One is it's difficult to integrate, and two, it can't handle the data that we need it to handle. Even in the smaller facilities, sometimes we have shots that require just a ton of stuff in them, and Modo sometimes has a hard time with that. I really do echo that hope that they'll be able to remedy that.
Hey, Mike, I've just got one little thing I want to add on top of what I said. One of the great things about the Modo team in my dealings with them over the years is they have a passion for the artists and creativity above all other things, yeah? And obviously, as these two companies, one's built for the very high end, one's built for the more agile component of the visual effects industry, I would hate to see them lose that passion for the user experience. I think it's really, really important, and I think that visual effects, you know, over the years has become a little bit too much of a technical pursuit, and I really, really love Brad's passion for how it's all really about the artist and allowing the artist to iterate as quickly as possible and be as creative as possible, and I would hate to see that lost.
Yeah, what he said.
The Foundry's 160 staff, Luxology's around 30, and they're consolidating but not losing staff. In fact, they're going to be hiring. But looking around the rest of the industry on this side of the equation, do we think that there's going to be more consolidation? Do we think, I mean, what's the sort of, Rob, what do you sort of, there seems to be a push towards open source. Part of that seems to be almost, you know, inspired by avoiding these patent trolls. But, I mean, what's the rest of the industry, do you think, looking like?
You know, it's not clear to me if more consolidation is on the horizon, but I think the idea that the studios, I'm sorry, that the studios are going to have products that are having a greater investment from the vendors to see a merge happen like this and or an acquisition happen like this and the and have the result out of it be more staff and hopefully new markets available, you know, perhaps Modo greater adoption into visual effects and perhaps seeing Foundry's tools find their way into design where they might make sense. Anything that gets more resources on the development side of tools for our artists is terrific for the business. And I think that part of it is the part that I definitely am in favor of and definitely supportive of.
With the caveat that we don't want to lose focus, right? There are certain workflows and certain tool sets and as I was saying, picking the right tool for the right job, you want the focus to stay on the workflows that make sense in our industry. And I think that many of the things that Kim was pointing out can make sense in visual effects and can make sense in design. There are certainly other things where it can be a dilution in the end of development resources if the focus goes away from features that are specific to visual effects. So, like, for example, Tim was mentioning earlier, larger data sets.
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting to note. I mean, there's another, you know, major application provider for all of us in Autodesk, and they have not there might be people doing some design work in Maya, but they have not tried to merge their design products and, you know, and Maya. And, you know, they have a lot of experience at this. So the idea that there is some crossover is probably true, but you're absolutely right, Sebastian. Without the attention to the needs of the users of the various workflow, you make the tools worse, not better, and that's not what everybody wants to see happen.
Can I talk renderers for a second? I mean, how much does it matter that, I mean, it seems to me that it's incredibly important that the Foundry remain render agnostic because, you know, you've got, even on this call, multiple different renderers being talked about, and there are good reasons why you pick the renderers that you pick. Kim, I mean, should the Foundry stay away from pushing a renderer?
You know what? I've got to say, having Katana, I think that for them as a business, and, you know, the high-end visual effects companies are, we're a little bit of a niche, you know, we're important customers to the Foundry, but I'll say this, I think that the Foundry, regardless of whether Modo was incorporated, have to at some point offer a solution that has a bundled renderer with a material system that is easy to use. I think that eventually, you know, all of us in the movie industry will have bought Katana, and then that'll be it. I think that if they want to be more accessible to the little shops and commercial facilities, and even games use a lot of pre-rendered stuff, I think that they have to deeply integrate a renderer and have a material system and have an opinion about how you actually light. As opposed to offering a harness for lighting, they actually have to go, hey, here's a great image-based lighting system. It just works as well as the one in Modo. So I think, no, I don't think they should stay away from it. I think they're a business. They have to make money. And I think that they have to cater a little bit wider than purely the high-end visual effects industry.
Okay, so
I don't think that's in competition. Sorry to just add to that. I don't think that's necessarily in competition with being open to many renderers. A good example is SideFX Houdini, where they ship with their own renderer, but they have great support, you know, class leading support early on for a PR man from RenderMan. So and maybe even another renderer in there now. So there's it's definitely those two things are not incompatible. Being open to plug any renderer in and shipping with a product that works well out of the box, I think is a proven strategy.
Agreed.
Absolutely. I cannot agree more. And I actually think that if we look inside each one of our facilities, there is not one renderer, right? Even though we have a predominant renderer, we all have previews and GL previews, et cetera. And that's just yet another renderer. And there are special purpose applications that or special workflows that have specific renderers for them. I do agree, Kim, with your view of having a context and so being tightly integrated. However, I agree with Rob that this is not exclusive, and I think that this is where the effort that we have been doing, but certainly it's a we collective, so not just Weta, but also Sony, in trying to industrialize visual effects and proposing standard exchange formats and standard workflows, some of them commercially and some of them open sourcing, but it's a great move in that direction because that gives you the compatibility and the ability to keep innovating in individual areas while picking the best of breed where there is one.
So, I wasn't suggesting that a single renderer was the way to go. I think it's good to leave it open because they've already got that functionality. Why would you lose that? Yeah,
exactly.
I think that they need, you know, one of the harder things for Katana for the little studios is that it is, you know, there's still quite a bit of work to integrate that into your pipeline, even if you have a pipeline. You know, one of the attractive things about Modo is, you know, it kind of works out of the box for certain kinds of work, just like XSR used to work kind of out of the box. So I think that there's opportunities if they more tightly couple a renderer, and now they've got one. I think it's pretty exciting.
And Tim,
seeing that integrated in Nuke would be great.
Yeah.
Tim, if suddenly somebody said to you that the Foundry's adopted Arnold or V-Ray or RenderMan, is that something that would bother you? Because, you know, do you need to just use? I mean, is it a price problem? Where are you at with renderers, Tim?
Well, where we are with renderers, first of all, just to answer your first question, I guess, if the Foundry suddenly adopted one of those, I don't know that it would really affect us too much simply because apart from Mari, we don't, here at any rate, we don't really use Foundry products. And the reason we don't use Foundry products is just to be transparent with you, their price point. They're for, you know, shops our size, they're just frankly quite expensive. And the... you know, the solutions that they offer are definitely for niche markets and for the higher end industries, and it's just not something that's perfectly appropriate for us. That said, since we're in Softimage and we do have access to renderers such as Arnold and V-Ray, it would definitely interest us to know which one the Foundry went with, just in case, you know, we decide to switch gears, business changes. We gear up or whatever, and we suddenly need to, you know, shift up a little bit. So I don't know if that answers your question exactly.
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, I think we'd all agree that if there was, it's not a criticism, but like an obvious place that Nuke could change is the scanline renderer. Wouldn't you say that, Rob?
Certainly. I mean, we leverage it to a pretty small degree simply because the complexity of our assets and the work it takes to take a really complicated hierarchy and get it represented in an efficient way in Nuke, it's a lot of work. And there's a lot of power available if you're able to more tightly couple that 2D and 3D interaction, which is, you know, we're starting to see steps in that direction, but there's a lot more work there, and there's a lot of really exciting things that can happen when that is available to the artists.
So, Kim, there's the gaming industry's take on all of this. I mean, can you sort of speak to how much you're having to write custom code anyway and how much this is really these products play in their kind of native format?
So I'll be honest. I think when it comes to any of the packages of Luxology or the Foundry, you know, Mari for sure, we do customization. Most games companies that would use it would put their own sort of internal hardware shader models into the system. But outside of that, you know, classic content creation, there's not, you know, other than the usual asset management, if you're modeling in Modo, there's not a lot of customization that happens in content creation tools in the games industry. You know, their tools are most of the engines that they're using and the workflows that are built around them. So I think the games industry, people typically using Modo or modelers, and then we also have environment people that I've seen, you know, both at LucasArts and in other companies, it's used for sort of, you know, generating matte painting backgrounds, doing concepts, baking lighting, and there's not a lot of customization that happens there.
So the Autodesk guys recently took on Exotic Matter and Naiad and are not running it as a product per se, but incorporating that technology. Is it safe, Sebastian, to say that the big sort of hole that is glaringly interesting, and I do mean interesting, in this scenario is effects, animation and effects work? Because certainly that's not a strength of Modo, but neither is it a strength of the Foundry of fluid sims, cloths, complex hair, and a lot of the practical volumetric stuff. I mean, there's no deep compositing out of Modo. Is that the big area that you might hope that they might move into?
Well, I would rather them focusing on the integration of this before they of the product as they are and figuring out what is the best fit rather than starting to think at what else, right? I think that there is plenty of work as there is. Maybe FX is certainly an area that as you noted, neither of the two products cover. But it's also not an area that is particularly easy to enter and innovate at the scale that we are required. Naiad was a good example of such innovation, but it's certainly an effort and not something to be taken lightly. Is it a potential area? Absolutely. There's still, as Kim was noting earlier, computer graphics and in this particular case, simulation is still an area where there will be years and years, if not decades, of continuous innovation. But if that should be their first focus, probably I wouldn't say so.
Because those Houdini guys are doing a pretty good job, aren't they, Kim?
Yeah, I'd say that Houdini sort of fills that niche for right now. I think that I agree with Sebastian. I think that if the Foundry and Luxology need to concentrate on getting their integration strategy together in terms of how all these products fit together. And then I also think that they need to consider character. I think scalability as well, like, and maybe Katana and Modo in some way are going to they're going to come up with some vision of how that works. But I also think character technology is a little bit lacking in terms of rigging capabilities in Modo. Although I know they've had plans for that. I think that I'd rather that they put their effort on scalability first, then character, scalability, integration, and then character and effects. You know, there's a great package that sort of fills that niche right now.
And what do we feel about just the scriptability aspects and the ability to write extensions? Because surely that was the thing that made Maya, Kim, the thing that became just why it became such an industry standard is that everybody basically built off the top of Maya. Is that, I mean, you said not so much in the games, but with your effects hat on over at ILM, surely that's a key central point to being able to incorporate it in a pipeline.
Yeah, I think having a good API so that you can expand the product is good. Everybody wants to do things a little bit differently. They've got their own tools. They need to integrate their own data sets. And, you know, I'll be honest, I'm not such a deeply experienced with Modo that I know what their programmer's interface is like. But I didn't get the impression that it's an impossibility to do that sort of stuff. In fact, you know, Autodesk were one of the first to have a reasonably complex API. It's not perfect. As anybody, all these facilities that use Maya know that it's not easy to write plugins for it, but it does work. It's just not the most elegant thing in the world.
So earlier, Rob, I asked the other guys what they didn't want to see happen, but I don't think I asked you. I'm going to maybe suggest that one of the things you've certainly advocated is open source. How well supported do you think these companies will be of that sort of general approach of open source and adopting open standards?
Well, I think it's interesting to see how the two things play off of each other. And as Foundry brings on additional tools and is looking to plug them together, rather than inventing their own standards wherever possible, leveraging off the open source community is a huge asset for that. And I think it can help expedite the development of this, and it also can prevent that sort of platform lock-in that, you know, you can become concerned about if you're locked into somebody's proprietary data formats. So I think continuing to embrace those open interchange formats, and then, you know, asking the community, continuing to reach out and saying, hey, what format would you guys like to see this stuff developed in? You know, whether, and this is something that's kind of an ongoing discussion, like how should materials be interchanged between applications? And this is not a solved problem. In fact, in some ways, it may be an impossible problem to solve. But the idea of doing that out in the open in a non-proprietary format is, I think it works. It's best for the industry, but I also think for a company like the Foundry, it's a strategic way to develop where you know the clients are much more trusting of the results that come out of that.
Okay, so we're going to finish up, but just to sort of as a summary and somewhat of a gimmick, I grant you, but the industry's had some bad news of late, and it's had some, you know, some good news. But today, just working around the four of you, and I'm going to start with you, Rob, and I'll work down in alphabetical order. Did we have a good day because of this merger, or did we have a bad day as an industry? Is this an overall good move or a bad move, or do you think it's neutral?
Well, it's hard to know, you know, in the long term whether it'll be a plus or minus, but I've got to say the fact that we're seeing greater resources put into applications that are targeted at our business is good news. And that kind of thing is the kind of thing I like to see. I think anything that has a chance of making the artist's lives better and getting them closer to the art of this work rather than the technical part of the work, I think is fantastic news.
Tim?
Yeah, I think it is a little early to say. Having just found this out yesterday, we'll see where this goes. I don't know. I don't. I'm optimistic. I think overall it's a good thing. You've got these two really great companies who really care about their users, really care about the products. They love what they do. They're passionate about it. And the fact that no one's losing their job over this. Luxology is getting developers. There's some new markets that could be explored here. For both companies, I mean, it sounds like a win to me.
Kim?
I think it's definitely good news. I think there's a lot of synergy between the two companies. And so far, you know, have the Foundry's expanded. They've done a pretty good job with their products. I think it's good for the industry in general. I think even for Autodesk, competition is a good thing. It's good to be driven to innovate. And I think that it's going to cause more innovation in our space.
And Sebastian?
I think it's a good thing that there is interest in and that people see opportunities in the market, and there is clearly the intent to invest and to move forward. And wherever people see opportunity, there is certainly going to be action, and there's going to be outcomes out of it. The only reservation I have is that I hope that this will turn out in a focus on our industry rather than in a dilution of the effort over multiple industries. I think that it can turn out into focus for different strengths into two different industries, but at the same time, I'm hoping, and that's why I remain neutral on my assessment and very curious to see how it will pan out.
Well, I want to thank you all for taking time to talk to us. We really appreciate it. And obviously some of you are on killer deadlines with major feature films about to come out and stuff. And so we really do appreciate you taking the time out. And it's a great thing for the industry to be able to hear these varied perspectives. So thank you all very much. Well, that's it for this week's FX podcast, other than to say that you should also check out our next episode of FX Guide TV, also due out this week, because in that we'll have an interview not only with the management teams of the new combined company, but also with John Knoll. John had a, well, surprising role in all of this, as you'll hear when you check out the next episode of FX Guide TV. On behalf of Jeff Huser, John Montgomery, and all the team here at FX Guide, thanks so much for listening.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by clicking the Contact Us link at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide.